Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFormRx, and joining me today is Eric McLaughlin to talk about the recently published SPRINT study, which examined the cardiovascular outcomes achieved with intensive blood pressure control. The study was stopped early in September 2015, and the results were published quite rapidly in the November 26th edition of the New England Journal of Medicine. Dr. McLaughlin wrote a commentary for iFormRx entitled, "Pulling Ahead After a Sprint, Evidence for Lower Blood Pressure Goals in Patients with Hypertension." Eric is a clinical pharmacy specialist in family medicine and is on faculty at the Texas Tech University Health Science Center in Amarillo, Texas. Thanks for joining me today, Eric, for the iFormRx podcast.
Thanks for having me, Stuart. Happy to participate in this discussion.
So, Eric, if you had to briefly summarize in four sentences or less the study entitled "A Randomized Trial of Intensive versus Standard Blood Pressure Control" to someone who hasn't read the paper, what would you say?
Well, in four sentences or less, what I would say is the SPRINT study was an outcomes-based trial that aimed at assessing the impact of lower blood pressure goals on cardiovascular morbidity and mortality. It compared traditional systolic blood pressure goal, or what we consider traditional, of less than 140 millimeters of mercury versus a more intensive blood pressure goal, less than 120 millimeters of mercury in high-risk patients that did not have diabetes. Originally, the study was planned to go 5 years, but as you pointed out earlier, it was stopped early because of a 25% reduction in the primary composite outcome, and it also, importantly, decreased all-cause mortality. So the Data Safety Monitoring Board recommended that the study be stopped.
So, Eric, no study is without potential confounders or research design decisions that might unintentionally bias the results. So I'm curious about your thoughts on the potential confounders and sources of bias in this study and what you think are the key strengths and weaknesses.
Well, overall, I think SPRINT was a really well-designed and executed trial. It was funded by the NIH, and while some drugs were donated by the manufacturers, they didn't have any role in the study. As far as major strengths of the study go, it was obviously an outcomes-based study, so looking at patient-oriented evidence that matters, this certainly fits up there in that category. And they had a lot of patients. I believe they had over 9,300 patients in the study, so it was a big one. A couple things you need to think about, I guess, when interpreting the study, and particularly sources of confounders or bias or strengths and weaknesses, I think it's really important to keep in mind the inclusion and exclusion criteria of the study, particularly as we apply this to individual patients. They did not include patients with diabetes or a history of stroke, so that is a potential weakness there, but there are, of course, reasons why they didn't do that.
So the SPRINT study results are in contrast to the ACCORD BP study, which was published in 2010, also in the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, the ACCORD BP study found no benefit from intensive treatment to a systolic blood pressure goal of 120 millimeters of mercury in patients with type 2 diabetes when compared to, quote, standard treatment, which was defined as a systolic blood pressure of 140. How do you explain and reconcile the differences, the results of these two landmark clinical trials?
That is a really good question and is something that's also discussed in both the paper itself as well as several editorials that have come out with publication of SPRINT. As you alluded to or stated, of course, they did use the same systolic blood pressure goals in SPRINT as they used in ACCORD. However, they really used an entirely different study design. In fact, in ACCORD, they used a factorial study design. So all patients were initially enrolled in a glycemic arm of the study that looked at lower hemoglobin A1C goals, i.e. less than 6%, versus a less intensive strategy where they targeted A1Cs of 7 to 7.9%. Then what they did is in ACCORD, they had, depending upon blood pressure and cholesterol values, those folks were then randomized to two other parts of the trial, looking at the utility of adding fibrate to statin therapy, and then also the other arm looking at lower blood pressure goals, or in this case, the same systolic blood pressure goal that was compared in SPRINT. So it is a very different study design, first of all. Second thing to keep in mind with ACCORD is that it is probably underpowered. ACCORD had really only about half the number of events that they were expecting. So the event rate was much lower. Secondly, the study population overall was only about half of that in SPRINT. So that's a couple of the hypotheses that have been put forth to kind of explain some of the differences between the outcomes noted in ACCORD BP, which was basically no difference with more intensive blood pressure lowering, versus in SPRINT, where we found obviously significant benefit in the study, in fact, was stopped early.
Eric, on the surface, the results of the SPRINT study are pretty compelling. The composite endpoint and all-cause mortality were reduced by 25%, and the incidence of heart failure was cut by almost 40% with intensive blood pressure control. However, the number needed to treat with intensive blood pressure control for at least 3 years to avoid one of the composite outcome events is 61. Do you find these results compelling? Should they change the blood pressure goals currently recommended by clinical practice guidelines? And finally, would you recommend intensive blood pressure goals to your parents?
Those are really good questions. To answer your first question about whether or not I find these results compelling, the answer is yes. I find them really very compelling. Not only did you have an NNT of 61, which is actually pretty decent for the composite outcome, the NNT to prevent any all-cause mortality was 90. So that's fairly significant. And that, in addition to a number of the secondary outcomes that were also statistically significant, such as you mentioned, heart failure, the number needed to treat there was a little bit higher at 123. Death from cardiovascular causes was decreased as well, with a number needed to treat at 172. And then the composite of the primary outcome or death had an NNT of 52. So taken all told, I find those cardiovascular outcomes pretty significant. What I really particularly find of interest in getting to your question about what would I kind of recommend for my parents, if they were greater than 75 years of age and of course, at high risk for cardiovascular events, I would certainly think about lowering the blood pressure goals for them. And the big reason for that is if you look at the data in the elderly specifically, and keep in mind they had a lot of elderly patients in this trial. In fact, I think more than a quarter, about 28% of folks were greater than 75 years of age. These older patients did just as good, if not a little bit better, than those patients less than 75 years of age. So when it comes to thinking about how I might apply this to practice, and I think about how the most recent JNC 8 guidelines relaxed the systolic blood pressure goals for a very elderly, I think this calls into significant question the wisdom of that, and I do think it's going to have a major impact on current treatment guidelines. Now, that being said, would I recommend less than 20 over 80 for everybody? No, not necessarily. And I think, you know, bottom line is you really got to use some clinical judgment and weigh risks and benefits and really individualize treatment. It's important to keep in mind that these lower blood pressure goals, while, yes, were associated with positive cardiovascular outcomes, there were some ADEs or adverse drug events that were associated with lower blood pressure goals, including some hypotension, syncope. There were some electrolyte abnormalities such as hypokalemia and some acute kidney injury or renal failure. However, the number needed to harms for those were fairly high. For instance, hypotension had a number needed to harm of around 106. Syncope was 173. Hypokalemia and acute renal failure were a little bit lower at 58 and 61, respectively, and is certainly obviously something to be concerned about, and we'd want to more closely monitor those patients. But I think overall, even though there were some side effects, the benefits certainly outweighed the risks, particularly when looking at the composite outcome and the all-cause mortality.
Well, thank you, Eric, for joining us today to discuss the benefits of intensive blood pressure control in patients at high risk for cardiovascular events. It's clear from your comments that you believe more intensive blood pressure control is warranted in many patients who are at high risk for cardiovascular events, including the elderly. Well, tell us what you think. We welcome your comments. Only iFormRx members can leave comments and participate in other interactive features on the website. You can become a member of iFormRx. It's free. Sign up today. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iFarmRx, signing off.